And welcome to the Tudor Her Story. Today I am talking to Emma Holbrook, best known as the editor-in-chief at the ill-fated wives of Henry VIII. But today we are talking about Catherine of Aragon's misconceptions and portrayals. Hello, Emma. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hello, it's nice to see you again.
Yes, we're close friends for the listeners, if no one knew.
As if you can't already tell that we talk every day.
Yeah, we talk every day, okay? So today we're talking about Catherine of Aragon's misconceptions and myths surrounding her. As a lot of people probably know, there's a lot of lies and rumours about Catherine of Aragon.
Is there not any, like, truths to these women? Like, I think it's so heart-wrenching to see how many lies are told about the six wives of Henry VIII. Obviously, there are a lot of lies and misconceptions about all women in history, or especially influential ones. But I think that the six wives get the most heat. I think every queen is important to history because not only for the husband that they were married to, or the king, or if they were queens in their own rights, the massive importance that they had on history, but also the fact that they themselves had personal goals, they had dreams, they had personal interests, and they were so much more than that. It's often or not you'll see with queens such as Catherine of Aragon or Anne Boleyn, you'll just see them being called, you know, the wife that was divorced or the wife that was beheaded. You don't really see a lot of, I would say, younger people knowing a lot about who they were as people until they take an interest in history. And it's so frustrating to me that even as a youngster, before I fully got into history, the amount of times that they would just say, oh, Anne was, you know, the first queen to be beheaded. She did this and did this to Henry, which we all know wasn't true. Or the fact that Catherine of Aragon, so many times when I was younger, was just labelled as the boring one. Which perhaps is what made me interested in her, because her tenacity, her dedication to not just being a queen, but allowing her daughter Mary to be queen, is probably what made me fascinated with her. I aspired to be like her, because in a time where, you know, women were to do as they were told and had to follow conventions, she stood out against them. You know, anyone could have said that, you know, Henry's the king. His desire to have a divorce, despite the fact that Catherine was well liked in England as well as other European countries, was just to be accepted. She should have just accepted it. The fact that she fought for so many years is astounding to me, because I can guarantee you that a lot of women in her time might not have had the same drive to protect not only her reputation, but her daughter's reputation.
No, that's really well said, and we've not even started the episode, but well
Thank you.
Said. Before we get on to Catherine of Aragon, I thought we could talk a little bit about yourself. As we all just know you as the ill-fated wives of Henry VIII, not as Emma the Woman. So firstly, what made you first be interested in history?
Well, I believe that when I was a child, my parents wanted me to be able to have multiple interests. I was quite an energetic child. Being someone with ADHD, you quite find that we are energetic. But my mum especially was very passionate about me being creative. She herself was very much into art. She was into the media. And I believe when I was younger, I think when I was around about 5 years old was when she first started trying to get me into reading more. The original Horrible Histories, the books, they were published in the 90s, I believe. We found them in a charity shop, and my mum said, let's try these, let's try and expand her knowledge. She wanted me to get an education, because none of the people in my family had gone past a college education, which was important for her. She wanted me to be able to stand out on my own against, not nothing bad against my family, but she wanted me to have something that made me unique. And I think she could sense when I first started reading the Horrible Histories books and then watching the TV show that I liked history. And I'm quite fortunate to have been born in Corby in Northamptonshire, which has a beautiful castle called Rockingham Castle, which is one of the oldest castles in England. It was there, I believe, around 1066, so it is quite old. It has Tudor heritage as well, which I quite love. And I believe I was visiting there perhaps every year, thanks to my school, and it just made me want to learn more about history.
Although I could talk to you for hours about important stuff in the UK. So, firstly, do you want to tell us a little bit about Catherine of Aragon before we get onto her misconceptions slash myths?
Yeah, of course. So Catherine of Aragon is the first wife of King Henry VIII. She is the daughter of Ferdinand of Aragon and Isabella of Castile, considered two of the greatest monarchs of history. They were absolutely fierce rulers, although their marriage was an alliance-based one. They also chose one another because Isabella was the ruler of Castile in her own right, and Ferdinand was the ruler of Aragon in his own right, but he wanted to have control of Castile. So their marriage perhaps was one of necessity as well as one that they both wanted. Catherine was betrothed to Henry's older brother, Prince Arthur Tudor, and they were married, but sadly, Arthur died in 1502, and that led to Catherine saying marriage was not consummated, which in law meant that she could potentially marry Henry. And then she was married to Henry in 1509. And although the couple did have multiple pregnancies and at time did have a living male son, Henry, sadly he passed away, all too young. And their only living child, Mary, was to become the first queen in her own right. So Catherine does have a lot of impact on history. She is sadly referred to as the boring wife, which I think is wrong, because the fact that people believe that Henry did not care for her, and the fact that he did leave her for Anne Boleyn, his second wife, who is possibly, in my opinion, the most popular because of the controversy behind her.
Yes. So you bring me on to my first misconception that I was whilst researching Catherine for this episode. Did she declare she was a virgin when Arthur died to avoid being sent back to Spain?
But that is an interesting question. And in a sense, there is an argument to this because following the death of her husband, Prince Arthur, on the 2nd of April, 1509, Catherine was still severely sick from the sickness that claimed her husband's life. We do not know yet, I'm hoping one day we might be able to come up with a definitive answer for this, what the illness was. So she was severely sick at the time of his death and was not informed of his death until many days later, potentially weeks later. And once she recovered, both her mother and father back in Spain and the King and Queen of England, her in-laws, were both very concerned about whether Catherine was potentially carrying the next heir. So in Tudor times, and perhaps not later until, the Victorian era, it was difficult to tell if a woman was pregnant, because obviously you didn't have pregnancy tests at the time, and sometimes it would take weeks to know until bleeding stopped or she started showing. So if Catherine was indeed carrying a possible heir to the Tudor throne, she would have been allowed to stay in England because she was obviously going to be carrying the Tudor heir. And this would have meant that obviously she would be the mother to the future king or a mother to a potential princess. If the marriage had not been consummated, as Catherine did claim later on, she would have been allowed to potentially be married to somebody else. There was obviously the potential for her to marry Henry because, he was the future, he was now the heir to the throne. And obviously, with the marriage not consummated, it meant that she could still marry him. If the marriage had indeed been consummated, the likelihood of Catherine being returned to Spain was pretty high because not only had she been married and consummated her marriage to Arthur, she had been not been able to provide a heir to the throne. So she would have been returned to Spain, and the likelihood of her being married off to perhaps a courtier of her mother and father, someone that perhaps offered her father a lot of land, perhaps financial aid or military aid, because you do need to remember that Spain was dealing with trying to get all the Jews at the time to convert to become Catholics, basically. The likelihood of her marrying another prince or even an heir to a throne in another country was limited because of the fact that she would have consummated her marriage. So, because Catherine knew this, it obviously would have been difficult for her. She would have obviously known, sorry, that she would have been sent to Spain if her marriage was not consummated. And there is the argument that she did declare that she was a virgin to avoid being sent back to Spain, because in her mind, she would have been going back in shame, because her sister was going to be queen of Spain. Her sister had a marriage that was already producing heirs, so she would have had no right to being a queen. And she'd been brought up knowing that she was going to be queen of England. She'd been betrothed since a very young age. We also have to remember that at this time, not long after Arthur's death, the Queen of England, Elizabeth of York, sadly passed away. Now, this was a very critical moment for the then King, Henry VII, because he was obviously worried that if his only surviving son, Henry VIII, died, there was no living male heir to the Tudor throne. So it was even suggested that now that Catherine had said that she was a virgin, she might be his future queen, that she might marry Henry VII, her father-in-law, to produce an heir for the Tudor throne other than Henry. It would also prevent Henry having to send back what little he received of Catherine's dowry, because England needed the financial aid from Spain as well as the alliance, because Spain was a very fierce ally. It had the support of the Pope, it had other alliances within the Catholic faith that would help the Tudor dynasty secure its place on the throne, because at this point, even Henry VII knew that if something went badly wrong, his dynasty might not be secure. When Henry VIII was decidedly betrothed to Catherine, because she had been married to his brother, they needed papal dispensation from the Pope, which is essentially the Pope declaring that the marriage could take place. And Catherine was able to be married to Henry because the marriage had A, not been consummated. And in the Bible, it specifies, and I quote, "If brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family," which means that she must marry her husband's brother if the marriage is not consummated. So that allowed Catherine to marry Henry with the Pope's blessing and without any issues. Of course, Henry did later use the Bible to justify that his marriage to Catherine of Aragon was not valid. And I quote, "If a man shall take his brother's wife, it is an unclean thing. He hath uncovered his brother's nakedness, they shall be childless." And because Henry and Catherine continued to have miscarriages slash stillbirths, and only one child survived, and in his mind, it didn't matter that Princess Mary survived, she was not a son. That was his justification for the marriage not being valid. So there are arguments that Catherine did lie to say that the marriage was not unconsummated, because there was the belief that Prince Arthur was very sick at the time, of course, because he was born premature. There's not a lot of evidence to suggest that his ill health could have prevented consummation. And the fact that there was even questioning over Catherine being pregnant, because a lot of people, including her in-laws, did believe it had been consummated, because as we all know, Prince Arthur did drunkenly make the comment that he has sped the night. Sorry, I can't speak. Spent the night in Spain, which in Tudor era is his way of bragging about sleeping with his new bride. So that there are a lot of arguments, and people do say that Catherine wouldn't have lied because of her integrity in her Catholic faith. We just don't know. I myself tried to say that I believe she did not consummate the marriage, because I believe that if she had consummated it and had feelings for Arthur, I doubt she would have gone on to marry his younger brother, because in my mind, I don't see that as being something that you would do to someone who's just died that you loved. But then again, there is no evidence to suggest, to strongly say, yes, she did consummate it, or yes, she didn't.
Right. Sorry. That's interesting because I don't know if you've seen it, but it's recently been portrayed in The Spanish Princess.
Yes, that's one of the things that I watched, and I actually quite enjoyed watching.
She did consummate her marriage with Arthur. She obviously is very filled with Gregory to change the narrative. But do you think she would have actively lied to be Queen of England, as they portray it in The Spanish Princess?
I mean, I could say yes or no, because I could argue yes, being brought up to know that she would be eventually the Queen of England would have had an impact on her. She obviously was the daughter of a queen who would have brought her up knowing this is how you act as a queen. She had a thorough education, quite unlike some women of her time, and of course she passed it on to her daughter, Mary. I if she did do as the Spanish princess does portray, and of course it does change a lot of what we know to be fact and what we know to, what we believe to be fiction. If she did lie, I believe that it was thoroughly because she did not want to let both her mother down, because her mother expected great things of her, and maybe because she actually had fallen in love with Henry, as the show does portray. Maybe she had, you know, she knew she was destined for great things. But I could also say that her loyalty to the Catholic faith might have been a factor for why she did not lie. I mean, we honestly don't have answers for what happened, because as the show presents, Lady Margaret Pole heard the couple making love, which we don't know happened. I mean, we do know that Lady Margaret Pole had a very deep bond with Prince Arthur, and she had a loving relationship with Catherine, even as the years went past and she married Henry VIII. I just don't know, honestly. In my heart of hearts, I would like to have believed that she wouldn't have lied, but the Spanish princess, you never know, because it did get a lot of criticism, as did many of Philippa Gregory's books, which I don't always agree with. I do believe that Philippa Gregory is an amazing writer and historian. It's possible, I will say that it is a possibility, but we have to remember that these shows are dramatized for a reason. You know, we as the public love drama. We can't not dramatize something. So I don't think it would have been as it's portrayed in the show. I don't think she would have just turned around to Henry and said, you know, a virgin, please marry me. I think that she would have perhaps talked about it with her ladies that she trusted from Spain. Perhaps we don't have all the letters from history, of course. So she might have even suggested to her mother, I am a virgin, shall I come back? Or I did have intimacy with Prince Arthur, what should I do? But we just don't know at this point. But I would like to think that Catherine was smart enough to know what would happen to her. And if she did lie, then it was either genius on her part that ultimately backfired, or it was, she was very young at the time. We have to remember she was a teenager. So she might have just thought, I'll try it and see what happens. Because we have to remember she was probably scared, and she was paying to stay in England of her own money. So perhaps she thought it was her last option, but we honestly don't know. And I don't like to say things with definitive, because we all know that in the history community, things that are not proven leave open for a lot of debate. And sometimes debates like this can get very heated.
No, yeah, I think it's going to be one of the big debates until we have, sadly, very conclusive proof that They slept together. I don't think they found it at the time, did they? They didn't find anything from that night to go.
Yeah, I do remember saying, seeing, sorry, that they got someone who was outside or very close friends with Prince Arthur to say that he was, boasting about sleeping, spending the night in Spain. They allegedly brought forth the bed sheets that they laid on, which we actually find quite interesting because it was actually the first marriage in England that had like the proper had the tucking in. They led them in, and it was quite public in a sense. It's actually quite one of the first ones to do that. But I don't think there was ever any definitive arguments or evidence brought forward. I think it was just Henry trying to get a divorce, and he couldn't, say that Catherine was a bad queen. That he knew that she had the support of both her people, her family in Spain. She had, the Holy Roman Emperor, sorry, was her nephew. He couldn't get her on her integrity, so he had to get her based on the fact that their marriage had not provided any male children, therefore the marriage was invalid. So I truly believe that there was no ever definitive proof on Henry's part that the marriage was invalid.
So we need to go on to another misconception. The belief that Henry never cared for her,
Oh,
is that
yes.
true?
This is one of my absolute favorite questions to talk about. And absolutely not. There is no evidence to suggest that Henry did not care for Catherine. Many people believe that because he fell in love with Anne Boleyn, that he did not care for his wife. There is so much evidence to suggest that he absolutely did. Whilst he might not have loved her in the sense that he loved Anne Boleyn, I mean, Anne Boleyn was an obsession for him. And may I just clarify for everybody, she does not count as a royal mistress because to be a royal mistress, you actually have to have sex with the king. And Anne did not, neither did Jane, so she was not a royal mistress. People called her Mistress Boleyn, but she was not a royal mistress. Anyway, he showed many times that he cared for Catherine. The first thing, and probably the most important thing that people forget, Henry was subtle with his affairs. He always tried to hide them from his queen, which obviously, if you do not care for your queen, you would boast about them. I mean, we see with Elizabeth Woodville and her husband Edward, he was public with his affairs. Even with Jane Shore was probably his most famous one. She knew about them and it was public. A lot of people made fun of, Elizabeth for the fact that Edward was showing affection for Jane in public. That's not the case with Henry VIII, not till much, much later. And even then, he didn't boast about it. He tried to hide them, even to the point where he would leave to have the affairs elsewhere. He always talked about, how proud he was of his wife, and he liked to show her off and was affectionate. He wore her favors at jousts. He never wore anyone else's. The women that he had affairs with very early on, especially with ladies like Bessie Blount, although they were her ladies in waiting, people very close to her, they tried to hide the affair. And the only came to light with Bessie Blount when she was pregnant, because she was unmarried at the time. So the only reasonable argument was that she was pregnant with the king's child, and Catherine would have knew of the affairs. But I guess in a sense it would have been a kindness to her that she did not have to see them publicly as her mother did. Because if we take a look back at history, Ferdinand was extremely public with his affairs to on Isabella, her mother, and we can see many public arguments of him flaunting his mistresses, of him bestowing rights and jewels and monies upon his illegitimate children. Henry did not do that until Henry Fitzroy came around. Of course, the argument for this is that Henry had no male heir by Catherine at that point. So in his mind, it was more of a necessity more than hurting his wife. He valued her opinions on political matters, which just shows how much integrity he had for his wife. You know, you don't always have to include your wife in political matters. And the fact that he even entrusted Catherine as regent whilst he was in war shows you just how much trust he had for Catherine. And the fact that, if you take a look back, he is reported to have comforted Catherine after a miscarriage, I believe it was, saying, "We are both young, more children will follow." And he says the same thing to Anne Boleyn, but I think in Catherine's sense, it was more comfort rather than to Anne Boleyn, because he's reported even saying that if he had not been king and was free to marry, he would still have chosen Catherine. And you don't say that if you don't at least care for your wife. And I do believe, because although we do see him being cruel to her towards the end of their marriage, which is sad to see, he did try his best to try and get her to smoothly accept the divorce. Although in modern times he was never divorced, because in modern times we class divorce as a valid marriage, and in Henry's mind they were annulments because they were not valid. So I think that he did care for her. I don't think he loved her in the sense that he loved Anne Boleyn, but there was a bond between them even before their marriage, when he was, you know, the prince and she was married to Arthur. There was a bond. So yes, he did care for her, and there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that he didn't. Perhaps not towards the end of their marriage, where he was perhaps getting a bit annoyed for the fact that she did not want to divorce him, which, right on, woman, you fight for your man. You know, she wasn't giving up on him. And although he was giving up on her, he was trying his best to make it as painless as possible. And as we see with Anne Boleyn, who he absolutely destroys, there is a difference. Although you will argue that Catherine was a princess, right born, she was a Spanish princess, so he couldn't just kill her like he did with Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn was a subject, so he could do that.
Yeah, I find it ridiculous when people go, "Oh, we didn't care for her." I think definitely at the beginning there was a real love between them. My belief is, and I don't know if it's controversial or whatever, I'm sure I'll get a lot of comments after
I mean,
this.
let's discuss it.
I think the breakdown of their marriage was the amount of miscarriages they had. And
Yes.
I think it was an emotional impact on the both of them. And I think instead of coming together, they just drifted apart.
Yeah. And the amount of people that blame Anne Boleyn for it, their marriage begun to break down way before Anne got involved. Like, we see it years before he even begins the affair with Anne. He's already stopped sleeping with Catherine.
Yeah.
So,
That's my opinion. Like, I know a lot of people like to go, "No, Anne Boleyn is the one that..." But I think Anne is the final nail in the coffin, but I think they drew apart from, is it 1523, 1524, they start to
I
really
think
not
it's
spend
1524, yeah, around about the time that around about that time, I think, yeah, because I believe it's 1526 that Anne catches, like, and it starts to become interested in her. So
Yeah.
it was way before that. And people would be like, "Oh, Anne Boleyn is the reason that Henry divorced Catherine." No, there was even talk of him trying to get divorced and marry another relative of Catherine's. There was that as well, because he didn't want to hurt her, but the miscarriages were getting too much for him. And, you know, he believed he was fertile, as all men did. It was never the man's fault, it was the woman's fault. And he'd seen multiple of his siblings die as children, because we forget that Elizabeth of York and his father, Henry the VII, had many children. Sadly, not all of them lived to adulthood out of the four that survived. I believe there were seven slash eight. I can't really remember, because obviously we don't have exact proof. But yeah, it's sad to see that Anne has been blamed as the catalyst of the marriage's breakdown, because Henry had stopped sleeping with Catherine way before he got with Anne. Or if we can even say got with Anne, before he became obsessed with Anne, is the way I would put it.
Yeah, probably shifted his attentions or
Unwillingly, I would say.
whatever. So, Obviously, we've just been talking about Anne there. Do we know if Catherine was visibly upset by his affairs? So we know of Bessie Blount, possibly Mary, and possibly is it Anne Stafford in
Yes.
1510?
So, first of all, I would just say that Catherine is extremely different from her mother, Isabel of Castile. Her mother was public with her frustrations towards her husband, for having affairs, different to her sister as well. Her sister, who became Queen of Spain, whose husband, I believe Philip the Handsome, this is what he's called, had many affairs on his wife to the point where he even locked her Catherine's sister in her rooms when she found out that he was having an affair with one of her ladies in waiting. Catherine was completely different. Catherine, being brought up knowing that she was a queen, had, in my opinion, learned from her mother's mistakes in her mind. A queen had to be regal. A queen had to be seen as serene, graceful. She had to put on a face for her subjects to show that she was the Queen of England and she was to be taken seriously. So there is no evidence to suggest that Catherine had publicly been frustrated at any of her husband's affairs. So we obviously see that many of Henry's mistresses were ladies in waiting to all of his queens, although many of his affairs take place during his first marriage. So when Bessie Blount gets pregnant around this exact same time as Catherine of Aragon, which is a bit sickening if you think about the fact that Henry knocked up both his wife and his mistress at the same time, Catherine is obviously upset at the fact that her lady in waiting has just given birth to her husband's son. Obviously, he then bestows titles upon his son that would have made Catherine upset. And we do have records saying from, I believe, Eustace Chapuis, saying that the Queen was upset. But that was in a private conversation with himself. There's no record of her being upset. There's no record of having any animosity towards any of her ladies that were sleeping with her husband. Catherine obviously knew that she had to keep her opinions to herself. Of course, there is the argument that they might have had arguments in private, as we do see on the Tudors, and we also see in The Spanish Princess, when in a scene that probably is what realistically might have happened, when Catherine questions Henry of whether or not he's having an affair. I believe, do correct me if I'm wrong, not long after she gives birth or has a miscarriage. I can't quite remember. And he says no, which, of course, people would argue is not what would have happened. But Henry would have denied it because it would have caused his wife stress. He did not want any animosity between him and her. And ultimately, Catherine had learned that if her husband was going to have affairs, there was nothing she could do to stop it. She'd seen it with her father. And I believe that Catherine would have probably been upset in private with Henry. She would have asked him probably what was going on. She might have expressed her frustrations that he was choosing women that she was close with. Arguably, none of her Spanish ladies, which is actually quite interesting to see. I believe that he does send one of her ladies away. I don't know if it was because of a mistress or another matter, but he does send one of her ladies away and she does learn not to argue with him, which is what I give her credit for because I would have personally not been very happy if I was Henry VIII's wife. But yeah, she never has any public displays of agitation, anger, or anything, which is why she is so compared to Anne. But we have to remember, sorry. Anne was not brought up as a queen. Anne probably thought that she might have changed Henry's mind in having affairs. But as we know with Henry, he wasn't going to stop on Catherine of Aragon. He had an affair with, we believe, Anne Stafford, probably a year into their marriage. Potentially, he had affairs not long after the marriage, perhaps a few months, but we don't know. Henry was not going to stop having affairs. It just happens that Catherine was probably one of the best queens he had that dealt with it.
Yeah, I think, again, it's the Spanish princess. I think it Catherine was cleverer. Cleverer. She was, she, you
That's a
know,
word.
she,
That's a word.
I was like, is it cleverer? You know, not to argue against him, especially, I think if Anne Stafford was a real, you know, he did have an affair with Anne Stafford and they did have an altercation, I think she would have learned to have been quiet since then. We talked about a little bit briefly about Flodden in 1513. Did she go to battle and was she wearing armor 6 months pregnant?
Okay, so this is the controversy that I hear all the time of people saying that Catherine of Aragon rode into battle and fought pregnant. That did not happen. We know for a fact that Catherine did rally troops in full battle armor. She was visibly pregnant, so the armor was made to show off her pregnant belly, as we see in the Spanish Princess. But unlike the Spanish Princess, she did not fight at the Battle of Flodden. She was not present at the Battle of Flodden. She was, in fact, away from the battle site because obviously she was carrying the future heir. Henry would have never allowed her to do that, and neither would his generals, anyone with the same mind, not allow a pregnant woman who had no, absolutely no knowledge of battles, no training. No, nothing. And it's because her mother fought in the wars back in Spain that we get this assumption that Catherine was this warrior queen. She, of course, would have known how to rally troops through her mother. She saw her mother doing it, but she did not fight. And it angers me that we see so many people saying that because she, I believe she was present to see the coat or cloak, I can't remember which one, of King James being delivered, and she sent it to Henry. We know that for a fact. That people were like, oh, she was the reason he died. There's no proof of this whatsoever. So, no, she did not fight in the Battle of Flodden, but she was the reason that the troops went to fight in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's become a real belief, hasn't it? That she's just on the battlefield going,
Yeah, I think it's in Blood, Sex, and Royalty that we see Anne Boleyn turn around and go, she says something about, or Catherine of Aragon commanded a full army on horseback whilst pregnant, respect, or something like that. And it made me laugh because I was like, you've almost got it right.
So, final misconception on Catherine of Aragon. What did she really look like?
This is the best. The Spanish princess is the most accurate portrayal. And I say that because Catherine and Henry were both redhead. So it is the only redhead, younger version of Henry that we see. And it's the only redhead that I believe, do correct me if I'm wrong, version of Catherine that we see. I do say that out of all the portrayals, I do also love Maria Doig Kennedy. Although she was not a redhead in the show, sadly, that probably would have made it absolutely perfect. She did look a lot like Catherine. People believe that because Catherine was, and I quote, so much older, she was only 5 years older than Henry. Not like the 10, 20 years that people seem to believe, which why? Catherine was very young looking for her age, even when she was approaching her 30s and 40s. She was very young looking. Many people have said this, and they credit Mary's beauty to Catherine because Catherine was regal looking. She looked good for her age. She was, I think, she was called one of the most stunning women, or stunning queens. Although I do believe that Elizabeth Woodville has been called the most beautiful queen. Yeah, she was not elderly looking in any way. She was only 5 years above Henry. And even Henry himself looked very handsome for his age. I mean, he was very boyish when he first came to the throne. And then as the years came past, he matured and became more of a young looking, mature man. But yeah, she was not dark haired. She was red haired. I believe she had blue eyes. I believe that she was also fair skinned. She was not ghostly pale as people believe her to be. And she spoke English. A lot of people, for some reason, do not believe that Catherine spoke English. She was not fluent when she came to England. She had some knowledge of English, but she was not fluent. She became fluent as she lived in England. And I believe she had knowledge of French, and that's how she and her first husband conversed. And then she and Henry obviously would have conversed in English. But yeah, there's just so many misconceptions about her personality and her appearance that actually astounds me. I wonder if it is because people need a reason for why Henry left her, other than the fact that he was in love with Anne Boleyn. They have to, it's the same with Anne Boleyn. They had to accuse her of being a witch and having moles and warts and a sixth finger to justify why he left her for Jane, other than the fact that neither one of them produced a male heir, sorry. And I'm of course talking about the people of their time and later centuries, not modern era, of course. I think modern readers and modern historians know that, like, Anne was not in any sense ugly, and neither was Catherine.
Thank you, listeners. You have it here. She was pretty.
Yeah, she definitely was, and she had many compliments over the years from ambassadors, from even the French king, that she was good looking. And Henry is often said to have been talking about how pretty a wife he has and things like that. It was solely, the fact that she did not produce a male heir that he left her. I believe that if he had been provided with a male heir by Catherine, he would have stayed with her. It was not her looks in any sense, and neither was it her intelligence nor integrity. It was the fact that Henry had got it so much in his mind that Catherine was not a virgin when they wed, that this happened. And we even see it with people saying, oh, as I've said many times today, Catherine hated Anne. Never happened. Anne warned, Anne, not Anne, sorry. Catherine warned her ladies, do not say anything against Anne. She wrote in a letter to Mary, speak few words and meddle nothing, saying, in her sense, saying, do not say anything against Anne Boleyn. Because Catherine was smart enough to know that if her ladies, herself or her daughter, spoke out against Anne, who was clearly going to be involved in their lives for quite a while, that Henry would not have any of it. We see even when Anne does become queen, he imprisons his cousin Lady Margaret Pole for speaking out against his marriage to Anne Boleyn. She later does become executed for treason, although I doubt it is solely because she spoke out against Anne Boleyn. Yeah, Catherine was a smart, intelligent woman who did not want to lose any more ladies in waiting. She would lose her ladies in waiting when it became clear that Henry wanted to marry Anne, but she never once spoke out against Anne Boleyn. I believe that someone said there is one instance of her speaking in regards to Anne, but I, apart from the letter, I can't find anything conclusive. It might have been that she warned Eustace Chapuis to take care of her daughter, to make sure that her daughter said nothing, or to make it clear to him that she intended to fight. We don't know, for honesty, but there is no record of her speaking out against Anne Boleyn, and that's the true testament, because she could have. She had every right to speak out against Anne Boleyn, because this woman, although we now know that Anne had no intention of taking the throne from Catherine, or bedding him, in Catherine's mind, regardless of whether this woman wanted to be his mistress or his queen, because Henry was so obsessed with her, she was a threat in a sense, not a rival, but more of a threat. So Catherine had every intent, had every not intention, but right to speak out against Anne Boleyn. She could have said to Anne Boleyn, why are you doing this? I hate you for this, or you're ruining my chance, my daughter's chance of becoming queen. But she doesn't. And that's because Catherine knew the consequences of her actions, and she was intelligent to know that if she was going to fight, she was going to fight with dignity, regality, and she was going to use her connections to Spain and Rome to her advantage, rather than trying to insult the woman that her husband was clearly infatuated with.
Yes, And on that note, I want to thank you so much for myth busting on Catherine of Aragon. But before I let you go, I need to ask you some Tudor fun questions.
Oh, yes. I do
So,
apologize to your readers saying that if anything I have said you disagree with, you're absolutely intended to, but I always say that if it's fact, it's fact. You don't have to agree with it, you just have to accept it.
okay. So firstly, I ask every guest this: have you got a Tudor pet peeve?
Oof. Yes, and I think I have talked about this with you on multiple occasions. Do not pit the queens against each other or hate somebody for saying they have a favorite. Having a favorite queen, even out of the six queens, does not mean that you are hating other queens. I mean, I think me and you've had the discussion that your favorite queen is Anne Boleyn, and mine is Catherine of Aragon and Anne of Cleves. And people seem to, especially online, on social media, there are these extreme history lovers who say, "Oh, I hate Catherine of Aragon because I love Anne Boleyn." I hate when people do that. You can have a favorite historical figure and not pit them against each other. I will never, just because I love Anne Boleyn and not Anne Boleyn, sorry, I'm getting it wrong now. Catherine of Aragon and Anne of Cleves, I will never be angry at someone for saying they have a love of Anne Boleyn or Catherine Howard, the women who quote unquote replaced the queens before them. And I hate that because, in a sense, what you're doing is not showing a love for these queens. You are showing your ignorance of the fact that all of these women had an importance to history. And you are, in fact, demeaning the lives they led. Because, in no sense of the fashion, with any of the historical figures from any era of history, from any country in history, would arguably defend somebody who is being rude or insulting another person. So Anne Boleyn lovers like yourself would never obviously go against Catherine of Aragon or Jane Seymour because arguably these women would never have accepted it. And it's the same with people saying, oh, this is the best wife. I don't think there is or a best queen. Like, I don't believe in that. I believe that there is a, in a sense of when you look at how they did the job, you could argue that Catherine of Aragon, Jane Seymour, and Catherine Parr did the best jobs as queens. You could argue that, but you can't then say, oh, but they're the best queens in general, just because you love them. And I think that is a pet peeve of mine because it's just wrong, in my opinion. Like, I do say, like, I say I hate Henry VIII, for example, but it doesn't mean that anybody who loves Henry VIII, and I love Henry VIII, but I mean, like, I hate him in the sense of what he did to people. I don't hate him in the sense of I would say blatant lies about him. And that's what people need to realize is that you can hate a person or love a person, but to say lies about a person or to go against another historical figure just because they had disagreements with another, it's wrong. And people need to stop doing it because in a sense, you're destroying the art of history and people who write about history. You can love a person without hating another just because of that.
No, absolutely. Obviously, it's just you've outed me for being an Anne Boleyn lover. But I love Anne Boleyn, but I also love the other five wives. I love them all. They're
That's a
all.
sense because you can, sorry for interrupting you, but you can love the other people. You just have a particular connection with that person.
You can have a favourite to research without going, ugh, Catherine of Aragon. It's, you know.
And also another pet peeve in a sense is when I see these people going, "I am the reincarnation of Anne Boleyn," and then going, "Oh, I can't wait to see Jane Seymour die at childbirth." And it's on social media, and you see this, and you're like, okay. I'm all for people having their own beliefs. If you want to believe you're the reincarnation of Anne Boleyn, go for it. Like, absolutely. But please don't start saying these things or attacking other history lovers and their accounts, because I am seen that and I have witnessed it myself when a Anne Boleyn lover messaged me on my account and asked for me not to promote Catherine of Aragon as being a popular queen because Anne Boleyn was clearly the best. And yeah, I just think that we all need to stop taking sides in a sense of saying this queen's better than this queen. Like it's wrong.
Absolutely. Have you got a favourite history book, fiction or non-fiction?
Absolutely. So, for fiction, I've got quite a I would say not old book, but perhaps one that's not talked about much, and it's because it's child slash teen, and that would be Eliza Rose by Dr. Lucy Worsley, who I absolutely love. I think she has an amazing sense of bringing history to fiction. And in that book, we cover a lot of Henry VIII's wives through Eliza Rose, who is a lady in waiting. She brings historical accuracy to her books that I absolutely love because you do not have to know a lot about the Tudors to love the book. She teaches you it in a way that you don't feel like you're being taught. It's more like you're actually witnessing it. So that will forever be one of my favorite fiction books. Although I will point out, and I think you will agree with this, I'm soon to be starting The Apple and the Tree by Clemmie Bennett, who I've spoken with on numerous occasions, and she is a wonderful historian and a lovely person to talk to. Also a fiction book that takes place in the reign of Henry VIII. Non-fiction, it would be a toss-up between the current book I'm reading, The Palace by Gareth Russell, a wonderful book for people who both have visited and haven't visited, like myself. I'm trying to think of one more and I can't quite decide. But if I were to go with another non-fiction book, sorry, I would go Anne Boleyn by Hayley Nolan. And a book that I wasn't quite interested in until recent years. Because I was quite skeptical about reading it, is the Tower Letter by Sandra Vassaloy. I believe I'm saying it right. If I'm not, I do apologize. And when she talks about the supposed last letter of Anne Boleyn from the Tower to her husband. And for people who don't have a lot of knowledge on it, I would recommend you try it out. It is a wonderful book. She's just recently released a new version, I believe, with updated material. So I implore your listeners to go and try it out as I have absolutely loved it. And it has changed my perception of Anne Boleyn quite a lot because as somebody who doesn't perhaps know a lot about Anne Boleyn until recent years from studying Catherine of Aragon, because a lot of what we know is from Catherine of Aragon, it's changed my opinion quite a lot. So I would recommend that book, these books to any of your listeners, but Gareth Russell has my heart right now. I read all of his books. So yeah, I would recommend those.
Interesting book choices. I have got all of them but the Lucy Worsley one.
I would definitely recommend it. She's also written one, sorry, my English is terrible today. On I believe it's called Lady Mary, which is about the percept sorry, I can't speak. Perspective of Queen Mary the First of England during the time of her parents' divorce.
Okay.
So we see her being told by her parents that her parents are going to divorce. She sticks with her mother, and it's quite a fresh take because whilst we see on a lot of books and a lot of media the divorce of Henry VIII and Mary the not Mary, Catherine, we don't always see Mary's perspective. Because I believe people like to see Anne during that time, but it is quite a good book. So, any of Lucy Worsley's books, I would recommend.
And finally, have you got a favourite historical film?
Oh, God, that's quite difficult. When I was a child, it used to be The Other Boleyn Girl, but I have now since not decided I like that. Yeah, it is probably one of the worst ones, not saying anything against Philippa Gregory, I absolutely love the book. But that film with Scarlett Johansson and Natalie Portman is horrible. One particular scene which I will not label, but everybody knows what I'm talking about, is the scene with Henry and Anne. Absolutely hate it. Don't like it at all. But favorite, oh gosh. Oh God, a film. I would have to say it's a toss-up between Anne of a Thousand Days, because absolutely love it, and I love how they portray Anne as strong and intelligent and absolutely herself with no apologies. God, I'm trying to think. Because there's more TV shows for that than anything. Oh God. I probably would have to just go with Anne of a Thousand Days. But I am looking forward to seeing the new Catherine Parr and Henry VIII movie with Jude Law in it, mainly because she is one of the most underlooked of his wives. I think Jane Seymour, Anne of Cleves, and Catherine Parr are probably not the ones we see on TV as much or in film, because Catherine of Aragon, Anne Boleyn, and Catherine Howard have so much controversy behind them. So yeah, I would probably say Anne of a Thousand Days, but I will see the new movie when it does come out, and probably knowing me, it will probably become my new favorite, because you can't go wrong with historically accurate costumes, which I have seen and they look amazing, which a lot of films do wrong because they try to make women look so sexy that they forget that our sexy is not what Tudor sexy is. I mean, some women did have, very booby dresses, and we see that from, like, I think a French mistress who had her dress altered so you could see one of her bosoms, but it's not very popular Tudor fashion, I would say.
So thank you very much, Emma, for coming on my podcast. I really enjoyed speaking to you.
But it's an absolute pleasure for me, because you know how much I love speaking with you, and your ability to talk about, the Tudors, especially the six wives of Henry VIII, is amazing. And that's why I like speaking to women like you, and especially women who are unafraid to point out both the failures and successes of Tudor queens, because we need to be honest, but we also need to defend our past queens for stuff that they did.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you have a lovely day.